Hello, and welcome to the Guardian Test Prep Back to Basic podcast. My name is Dr. Christopher Seitz. I'm an emergency physician, and I'm here with my brother Jason Seitz, who is a firefighter, paramedic, and RN. Together, we run Guardian Test Prep, an NREMT test prep company that specializes in helping EMT and paramedic students pass their national registry exam. Our Back to Basics podcast was created to make what are sometimes complex medical topics easy to understand and retain for students of emergency care. Please like and follow us on your favorite podcast streaming service, as well as on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you for joining us.
So I recently read that manatees, or sea cows, I don't know who calls them sea cows, I call them manatees, they control their buoyancy in the water by like farting.
Oh.
Controlling the gas. And
that makes sense.
I tried it scuba diving and it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. It could.
Still got to use traditional methods.
Like your scuba gear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it didn't work.
At least you tried. All right, everybody. Well, welcome to the next episode of Guardian Test Prep Back to Basic podcast. Today, we're going to sponsor ourselves again. If you are studying for the National Registry exam or you're in EMT paramedic school, check out our program at guardiantestprep.com. We've got 15 hours of videos. You don't have to listen to them all at the same time. I feel like sometimes
it's
that's a selling point.
I've been trying to use the word, it's a self-paced, program. It's very much a self-paced.
All right, it's a self-paced program because like I feel like sometimes I think that's a selling point and people are like, I don't want to listen to 15
hours. I don't want to have to watch a 15-hour movie of guys.
It's broken down into very easy 5 to 10 minute little lectures on different topics that you're going to find on the National Registry Exam, but also the high-yield topics really for EMS in general. We took it from the National Standards. We've got workbooks, questions, a lot of good resources there for you. By the time this podcast releases... our paramedic question bank should be launched, 700 to 800, and continuing to grow. Paramedic question bank, again, written by experts in the field and those who do help write questions for the National Registry Exam. So lots of good stuff there. Check it out, guardiantestprep.com. Jason, what is our topic for today?
Today's topic is rhabdomyolysis.
Nice. You said it right this time.
Yeah, I keep calling it rhabdomyolysis.
It's not a thing.
For those of you listening, I don't know why. That's not a thing. I made up that word. But I wrote this whole curriculum for it, and I can't pronounce the word right. Rhabdomyolysis, which makes sense because myo means muscle, and lysis means exploding
cells.
Cells exploding, but yeah.
Yeah.
Destruction of cells through explosion.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Lysis. I mean, that's what lysis is.
That's what lysis is.
Exploding cell.
What's rhabdo mean?
You know.
I don't know either. I have no idea. Rhabdomyolysis.
I've gotten into the etiology of the word. rhabdomyolysis. Misunderstood concept. Confusing. I can tell you from personal experience, it's very confusing because this is take two at this podcast.
That's true.
We started teaching it completely wrong, but we got it right this time.
That's right.
Don't even worry about it.
That's what education's all about.
It's about us messing up for you, and then in take two, you learning what you need to learn.
Exactly. No, I like
really,
that.
Honestly. So it is a confusing topic, all right? The treatments and stuff are going to make way more sense if we can understand, first of all, normal physiology of a muscle, then pathophysiology of destruction of a muscle, and then it's going to make sense why you have those symptoms, right? Yeah. And it's also going to make sense how you treat those symptoms. So rhabdomyolysis specifically is basically destruction of muscle cells, excess destruction of muscle cells, differing from your normal muscle breakdown. So we're not talking about when you're lifting weights and you're breaking down muscle and you're building muscle. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about
a pathologic
disease process, right? Exactly. Or an injury process, a pathologic breakdown of muscles or a lysis of muscles, destruction, not necessarily just breakdown.
Exactly. And this is a good way to approach any medical topic. I mentioned this before. On take one, but so one of the, you know, anytime you, you know, especially if you're studying for your exam or you're in school, this is just a good pathway to follow when you're trying to learn on a topic is one is to figure out what the normal anatomy and physiology is, have a good general understanding of that, then understand what's going wrong with, you got to know that to know what's going wrong, then figure out what's going wrong because that's the pathophysiology or disease process, and then kind of figuring out what the complications are. So what, not just the disease process, but what complications or what down the line things are going to happen because of those complications, because that's usually then why our treatments
You get to treatments are easy now because, okay, there's only so many treatments we have, right? Like, and I'm not like poo-pooing on paramedicine or pre-hospital medicine or really even medicine in general, but like there's a limited amount of treatments that we do. There's not that whole lot of things. We don't have like a thousand things we do to the body. Like we're usually helping the body balance itself, taking it back to homeostasis using, you know, a dozen or so types of treatments,
right.
You know, like fluids or, you know, certain medications or pressors, you know what I mean? Like so what we know, the tools that are in our toolbox, we know that pretty well. Once we understand physiology and subsequently pathophysiology, now we understand what those tools are doing, how they affect the body. Now we can almost solve any problem.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that really is what separates, you know, like you said before, like cookbook medics or just, you know, even cookbook nurses or cookbook physicians. I mean, like even from a physician standpoint, like there are protocols that we follow, and I could just follow the protocol because it's written there. But that's not what I'm, you know, trained or paid to do. My job is to, because this is the other thing, right? Like we always say, you need to understand an algorithm or understand a protocol or understand a pathway so that you know when to deviate from it too,
yeah.
Right? Because like my job as an emergency physician, there's probably only, on a regular shift, I probably use less than 10 medications for every patient
right.
I see during that whole time, right? It's the same kind of like, there's certain medications that I use for certain conditions, all that, but what differs from me, from someone who's not gone through medical school and not gone through emergency medicine training, what differs between you and a layperson and having your medic background is that we need to know basically, again, that physiology, that pathophysiology, so that we know the general treatments. And yeah, we're using those on a day-to-day basis all the time, but we know when they're not going to work.
We can handle the outliers, right?
Yeah, handle the outliers. Like we are, I would say this too, we're not jacks of all trade. When it comes to emergency management and emergency systems, we are experts in resuscitation. And resuscitation does follow certain protocols and certain pathways on a case-by-case basis. We're always going to do a lot of the same things. But until we have an understanding of all these other things, we're not going to know when those same things need to change. You know what I mean? Like you've worked with medics. I've worked with physicians who they'll do the same thing every time. And it 99% of the time probably goes well, right? It probably works because that just works. But what about when it doesn't? And if you don't have this kind of background stuff, we don't take things back to basics. We're not going to be able to help that 1%, which is what we're kind of trained to do, right? We're kind of trained to, anybody can do follow a protocol, but can you follow a protocol appropriately, know why you're following a protocol, and then know when it is appropriate or when it needs to be deviated from or changed or...
Yeah, if I could make a manual for you to just follow in the back of the ambulance that would handle all cases, you wouldn't have a job. It wouldn't work that way. Like that's what makes us providers.
Right.
Anyway, long story short, rhabdomyolysis. So what is it? Rhabdomyolysis, and we've gotten into this a little bit, but it's breakdown of muscle. Now, I'm not going to say breakdown. I'm going to say destruction of muscle cells, okay? Inappropriate destruction of muscle cells. That when they're destroyed, they release things that are inside the cells that are toxic outside the cells, right? So these ions or chemicals or however you want to understand it, but the bad stuff that's great inside the cell, it's not so great outside the cell, is outside the cell now. And then that has systemic effects, typically on the kidneys, that can create breakdown of our entire body and issues with us functioning, right? So not only are we going to have like a local issue where our muscle hurts and it doesn't function well, we're also going to have systemic issues. So that's why I kind of want to touch on just how the kidneys work real quick, so you can understand down the line when we start getting into treatments. A lot of our treatments and our prevention and our concern with rhabdomyolysis is kidney failure after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you want to just kind of touch on, just review the function of the kidneys so we can understand that.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a high level bird's eye view, so the kidneys basically, you know, they do a lot of things, but they filter the blood, right? So blood comes, if you guys remember the anatomy of a kidney, right? The functional unit is the nephron. So the nephron's made up that glomerulus and Bowman's capsule and the loop of Henle. But anyway, blood comes in, it gets filtered in that glomerulus. That's a hard word to say. And then all the byproducts of metabolism and, like you said, toxins. Now, they're normal toxins. They're toxins that have to be filtered just from daily metabolism. So that's why I say byproducts of metabolism. But they get filtered out of the blood and peed out as urine. And the blood filters back in and continues to, you know, to filter and function as it is. So, again, what we'll see as we get into this is that, you know, we talked about those complications and long-term things. It's going to be kidney issues that we're going to have to worry about and deal with if rhabdomyolysis gets too, you know, too bad, because there's a range there too. I mean, there is like a range of rhabdomyolysis. Like, anything is a range, right? Any pathology or pathophysiology is kind of a range of things. So you can have, you know, mild to very severe inappropriate breakdown of muscle tissue based on what was the cause.
But if you're in the ER, we don't care. I shouldn't say we don't care, but we're not concerned with your muscle damage.
Your body's
that's not what's going to kill you.
Right. Your body's going to heal itself. Right. So if you come in, you're like, oh man, like my muscles are really sore and you're not having any kidney problems and your blood's not acidotic. And we'll talk about why those things can't
Right. We're worried about the emergency here is the kidney failure.
Yeah.
So, and I like that you touched on, like, the kidneys filter blood normally. They filter toxins in the blood, normal toxins in the blood. What happens with rhabdo is that we have excess toxins in the blood, and now the kidneys are overtaxed. So there's nothing wrong with the kidneys having toxins in them. That's what they're there for, right? They're there to filter those. But when we have to overwork our kidneys because there's so much toxins, that's where we run into the issue. Mm-hmm. So cool. So moving on from there, let's talk a little bit about standard muscle physiology.
Okay. This is take three. All right. But this we're doing this for you guys. We want to make this as simple as we can.
Bringing something back to basics is difficult because I don't want to have to tell you everything. Like, you should read a textbook.
Well, and you don't need to know every single minute detail, but you need to know enough. And we want to make sure that you do. So take three. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to do my best to explain how as simple.
I'm like the control here because he'll get done talking and I'll be like, hey, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah. So. And then maybe we'll go to take four. We'll see. But I'm going to try to explain it. And then either we're going to go to take four and I'm going to try again, or we're going to continue on.
Got it.
So here we go. So the way a normal muscle cell or fiber works, all right, is there's two things you have to understand is calcium and ATP. Okay. ATP, or adenosine triphosphate, is that energy unit that the body uses for everything. Every cell uses ATP to do its thing. If it's a muscle cell, that's to contract. If it's a brain cell, that's to send a nerve impulse.
I often say that it is the currency that cells use, right? Like, it's like the money that cells use to get things done.
Perfect.
Like, without ATP, you're done.
Yeah. And you guys remember this. I mean, you guys should know this back from, you know, this is definitely taking you back to basics, but from your general physiology courses, ATP is what we use to do things. It's the energy source. We need to have that. Okay. So the body makes ATP inside the cells. But in a muscle fiber specifically, or a muscle cell specifically, the function of that cell is to contract, right? That's what we're trying to accomplish when we activate a muscle cell. So the muscle cell gets activated, and what happens is calcium that is stored inside a little house, it's called the sarcoplasmic reticulum, but you don't have to know that.
House.
So the calcium is stored in a little house inside the cell, and when the cell is stimulated to do its thing, calcium is released from that house and then triggers ATP, that energy source, to contract the cell. Okay?
God, that makes so much more sense, Chris.
Okay, that's good. That's how a normal cell works. All right. Now, what can happen and what happens in rhabdomyolysis is that two different types of pathways can occur that cause problems or damage. But just remember in general that what's happening is that cells, the end product of rhabdomyolysis is that we've got muscle cells that are dying, and that's causing problems with the cells nearby it to die as well. So here we go.
Here we go. Two ways that rhabdo happens.
Right.
One, the cell membrane is destroyed.
And that's easy,
right? In some way or another, right? So from injury, the cell membrane pops, the outside of the cell pops open, and now things are rushing in, things are rushing out. The cell will
The things explode. That are inside your cell are supposed to be inside of it. The things that are outside are supposed to be outside of it. If everything from the inside comes to the outside, well, that becomes a problem. Yeah. We can talk a little bit about more of that in a second. But that's one way. That's kind of like the easy way. Like, the cell itself gets damaged, ruptured, it explodes.
As complicated as we're going to make it is that sodium will rush into the cell, and it's salt, right? Water follows salt, and then that cell will become engorged with fluid to the point of, like, bursting, right? Or lysis.
Right.
So that's one way rhabdo can happen. That's one way a muscle cell can lyse.
Yep. Another thing that can happen, and we see this when we talk about like people who go into rhabdomyolysis because they're just working out like crazy, is that they use up all their ATP. So the cell keeps getting stimulated to contract. Calcium keeps coming out of its little house, but there's no ATP there for it to trigger. So the calcium sits there. Well, it needs to be in its house. Calcium really shouldn't be anywhere but either outside of the cell or in its house. So if it's not in its house, then it's sitting inside the cell, and then that becomes a problem because that calcium starts to trigger other bad things to happen inside the cell.
Because there's now an imbalance of ions.
Right. Yeah. So that calcium starts to trigger other things to break down other parts of the cells and basically almost like eats itself from the inside out. And again, then lyses, right? Then it bursts. And then when it bursts or when it opens, or when it sodium comes in, water comes in, this is a cascade, right? These are the two ways that cells can die in rhabdomyolysis. When everything from outside the cell comes in and inside out, basically when the cells explode and everything that was inside them that should have been inside them is now outside of them, that causes toxicity, that causes acidosis, that causes a cascade of events to occur in the nearby cells, which causes them to have problems. And we can kind of get what's called this myelitic cascade where, because there's this damage, cells nearby start to die as well. And then it's, you know, like a minefield of things blowing up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do we need to take four? Or?
No, I think that makes sense.
All right. Well, send us your emails at podcast at...
send us your arguments against this.
Yeah. No. So hopefully that makes sense. From a high level, hopefully that makes sense. So that's how...
It's as simple as this. It's muscle death from either expenditure of ATP, you've used up all your energy, or injury where something has damaged the cell to open it up, right? That's rhabdomyolysis in terms of the cell has exploded, right? Now we have kind of two effects that we're concerned with, right? And this is what I meant when we were talking earlier, or what you meant. I don't know what take I said it, right? but where we have this kind of progression of education where we go from physiology, pathophysiology now, and now it makes sense to start talking about symptomatology.
Sure.
Okay. So if I have muscle death, necrosis of muscle tissue in general, obviously that's going to make my muscle hurt and it is going to interrupt muscle function, right?
Because it's going to hurt because there's going to be inflammation now. All those things that were inside the cell that are now outside, it's not supposed to be there. So our body starts to try to like fight against that. We get inflammation, and obviously inflammation leads to pain as well. So anytime we have inflammation, we get pain. So now our muscle, we've got pain.
So now it hurts and it's swollen and we have interruption of function, obviously, because we have literally less muscle cells now to use, right? And this is cascading and it's spreading. The muscle's going to fail, right? We also now, like you were saying, things that were inside the cells are outside the cells. Those things can be very toxic if they overload the kidneys. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things that specifically happen. One is potassium is outside the cell now. And potassium can make us very acidic in general.
Right.
That taxes the kidneys right off the bat. The other thing is myoglobin is a... I don't want to say a byproduct.
It's the functional unit of muscle fibers.
So when a muscle cell dies, it releases myoglobin, and myoglobin can tax the kidneys as well.
Well, and this is what you meant earlier when you said that, like, we don't really care that the muscle hurts. I mean, we do. We want to treat your pain, but it's not the inflammation of the muscle that's concerning. The concerning is the two main complications that can happen from all this cellular breakdown are kidney issues, because the kidney can't handle all that, or acidosis, because now we've got the intracellular ions like potassium. Potassium is a big one, right? Inside the cell, that's now outside the cell, that can lead to acidosis and can lead to taxing on the kidney, because the kidney's got to filter that all out. So these are the two main things that we worry about. Again, acidosis, or the systemic acidosis, which can lead to problems in other, you know, organs and things, and the kidneys themselves. Now, the kidneys filter this stuff on a normal basis. Anyway, every day you have cells that die, and, you know, potassium's now outside, and your kidneys filter that fine. It's the excess. It's when they get overtaxed, and we start to lose kidney function because the kidney can't handle it anymore. And then also now this stuff backs up in our system, and this is kind of cascade of events that can lead to a lot of problems.
Right. So two things we're worried about. Your muscle hurts, and I want to treat that pain. Your muscle is not working, right? Your muscle hurts and it's not working, so we want to try to deal with that issue. But the biggest concern for a pre-hospital provider or a acute provider is your risk for renal damage.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Your risk for that. So that's why I want... This is what we're trying to build in you guys, is this kind of index of suspicion for, yeah, his muscle hurts. Okay, he injured his muscle. He overused his muscle. But wait a minute. A good provider sees, well, he's at risk, though, for kidney issues if this is rhabdomyolysis.
Right.
Right? So that's, this is going to help us understand the symptoms. The symptoms, the classic triad of symptoms, are going to be muscle inflammation and pain, mm-hmm. interruption in muscle function,
right,
and super dark urine. Mm-hmm. Why do we have super dark urine? Because of the kidney damage, right? So if we start seeing the kidney damage, now we know this is rhabdo, this is serious, and we have a systemic risk for kidney failure. And this is an emergency, right? This is what separates a injury, like an injury where I hurt my muscle, to like a true emergency.
Yeah. Well, and things too, and that function piece is important, right? Because like you can, if you have inflammation or damage or, you know, an injury to a muscle and I can still move it and it's sore like that, you know, that's less. But if I'm having like pain and inflammation in the muscle and I'm like, I have like weakness as well, that's a really big, like, okay, hold on a second. That's not normal, right? Yeah. Like that is, at, you know, unless, of course, you like ruptured the muscle or tendon. But for the most part, if you've got a sore muscle, but you, the patient is actually having trouble, like, and they have weakness with it, that, again, really increases that suspicion. Yeah. Because really, even just those two things should start to raise your suspicion. Because you don't really want to, like, if you wait for
dark urine.
Right, yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a problem. So,
right.
But again, those classic triad, pain, weakness, you know, lots of function, weakness, pain, weakness, and then dark urine.
Dark urine. You know. Yep. So you should now understand that there's kind of like the local level issue and there's a systemic level. The local level is that pain and weakness of the muscle from the muscle fibers being destroyed. And then the systemic issue is the toxins that are in the systems from the muscles exploding are now damaging the kidneys. Boom. Cleared. We're done with that. We're going to move on. All right. Now let's talk about causes of rhabdomyolysis. Like, how do we get there? Right. We talked about two ways that it can happen. The rupture of the cell membrane and the depletion of ATP. Those are the only two ways that rhabdomyolysis is going to happen. So there's traumatic causes and non-traumatic causes. Crush injury, that's going to damage the cell membranes, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And if we have too much of that, it's going to cause it.
And crush injury more as a specific type of trauma, because a crush injury, you're going to have basically crushing of like a large amount of muscle tissue, right? Like if I cut your hand off, you're not going to get rhabdomyolysis because it's a very localized, like it just happened right there. Your blood's going to start to clot. But if I crush a large surface area of muscle,
rupture all those membranes.
Yeah, that's why crush injury specifically.
And we talked about just last week, I believe, podcast time is weird, but I believe it should have been last week, we talked about compartment syndrome, mm-hmm. and kind of what's going on with that. So that kind of makes sense, right? Crush injury leads to that increased pressure. If that ruptures cell membranes, now yeah. we have that issue. We talked about that backflow of toxins, and that's hitting the kidneys now, and we've got issues with...
And that's one of the things with crush injuries. That's a lot of times when that's why when we talk about people being pinned or when like things on top of them, yes, there's a bunch of injury going on there. The rhabdomyolysis is happening like on that local level, but it's when we release that pressure and now the toxins flow into the system. And now the kidney's like, whoa, how am I supposed to take care of all, you know what I mean? So that's again.
So take a listen to that if you want to hear more about that. So crush injury, long-lasting compression. So this is like someone, I told this story to you recently, where like I had a guy who was laying down in the same spot for like 8 days on the floor, and he like melted into the floor, and there was like all this, it was gross. But that can happen, right? Long-term compression eventually interrupts with the cell function and the membrane. Venom, we talked recently about snake bites too, yeah. in a podcast. So venom, certain types of venom can deplete your ATP.
Can deplete ATP, right.
So that it's not interrupting the cell membrane now, and now it's depleting ATP.
And you think about it, like, so you're talking about snake venom, like the reason snakes have venom is to paralyze their prey. Well, how do you think they paralyze their prey? By depleting their ATP so they can't move anymore,
yeah.
right? So it's same thing, they bite us, and then that same thing can happen, depletes our ATP, all of a sudden we start to develop rhabdomyolysis.
Right.
And hopefully we don't get eaten by the snake.
Sure, yeah. Your concerns with snakes
fear.
Are pretty ridiculous.
Greatest fear.
And then electric shock. So those are your traumatic ways, right? Crush injury, long-lasting compression, venom, and electric shock. Electric shock makes sense, right? It moves in an irregular pattern through your body, and it
ruptures
the cell membranes.
Yeah, a large amount of muscle tissue can be affected by an electrical shock or a lightning strike or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that's going to then, you know, cause all these cells to die.
So non-traumatic ways... Overuse, that would be depletion of ATP, right? If I'm overusing a muscle, this is where you hear guys, you know, that are working out a muscle too much. It's taxed. They haven't been able to flush out lactic acid, you know, and now they've depleted the ATP in that muscle.
Yeah.
Certain medications, we won't get too deep into that. Infections can do this.
So I will say for medications, though, statins specifically, so cholesterol medications, the statins, Losartan and those kind of things, they actually can cause muscle breakdown issues. So that is one medication that you're going to see quite a bit. It's like the statin drugs, the anti-cholesterol drugs. Those can sometimes not typically lead to rhabdomyolysis. But when we talk about drugs that could, those are kind of one of them.
Muscle diseases and infections. So like muscular dystrophy, congenital diseases, infection in general. And then severe dehydration and exposure to heat. This is why in my field, firefighters are at a big risk for rhabdo a lot of times on fire scenes, because we are in all that gear. We're dehydrated because we're working in all that gear. There's increased heat and use of the muscle. So again, that would be depletion of ATP.
Yeah.
So depletion of ATP, rupture of the cell membrane from like an injury.
And what is going to put you at increased risk of rhabdomyolysis when you're in these types of conditions? Dehydration makes a lot of sense, right? Because what do the kidneys use? They need fluid and to flush things out. So,
which is a nice transition into why are we here? We're trying to treat it, right? So how are we going to treat it? Pre-hospitally, recognition is very important. This is why we went really into that assessment stuff. Like, recognition is important. Don't just chalk it up to, oh, your muscle's sore because the ball hit it really hard, or, you know what I mean, or whatever. Recognize the risk for that kidney damage over time. Right. So recognize it, and then it's going to be supportive care and fluid. Pain medication to treat pain, but fluid is going to be very important to not tax those kidneys. So the more fluid we can give the kidneys to help flush those toxins out, the better that patient is going to do.
Right.
In hospital, is there anything else that you guys would do?
There is, but I will add pre-hospitally. So thinking about other complications that can occur. So when we say supportive care, yeah, obviously fluids is mainstay of treatment, very, very important. Other things that you can see, though, is that when we've got all that potassium flushing into the system and the patient's getting acidotic, we can see arrhythmias. We can see peak T waves because we've got too much potassium. I mean, so these are other things you need to think about. When we talk about supportive care, we're talking about things like that as well. Like, we need to be on the lookout for arrhythmias, treat those appropriately per our protocols. Obviously, the fluids is, you know, the mainstay here. But think about these other things.
Oxygenation.
Things like, if someone's super acidotic, they could, from rhabdomyolysis, they could be having complications in other organ systems. So just, again, keep these kind of things in mind. In hospital, so again, lots of fluids. We're usually going to admit these people and watch them for a time. The way we diagnose it in the hospital is we basically check levels, right? So we'll look for electrolyte abnormalities. Another muscle breakdown product is CPK, or creatine kinase. So we'll look at that to see if there's too much of that in the blood.
There's also myoglobin tests you can do, right?
Yeah,
I heard it only responds, like sometimes that you can get false negatives and stuff, but
you can test for myoglobin. Well.
And then you guys will sometimes dialysize these patients.
Well, if it's severe enough and the person's extremely acidotic, or their, you know, kidneys just aren't functioning right, then sometimes they do have to go on temporary dialysis because we need to give those kidneys a break to be able to repair so they don't lose their kidneys.
And we have a podcast on dialysis if you want to learn more about that. But basically, this is just a artificial kidney, right? Taking your blood out. We're filtering it for you to not tax the kidneys. And
again, it's not that they have to go on dialysis forever. Now, the risk would be that the kidneys get so damaged from this kind of injury that they die themselves. But the goal is to maybe like put them on temporary dialysis for a while to give those kidneys a break so that they heal. I actually had in medical school, actually I won't say his name, but Alex, he is an emergency physician now. We both went to medical school together, and he used to do like really heavy bodybuilding before medical school. And then in medical school, you don't really do anything but study. So he didn't work out for like 2 or 3 years. And then he went to the gym and he did like a crazy, he was hospitalized for like 4 days. He almost went on dialysis. Like, yeah, he went into such severe rhabdomyolysis that he had to be hospitalized. And so, yeah, it's real. It happens.
So don't be dumb like Alex.
Well,
all right, did you guys have that kind of relationship? I don't know.
I didn't talk to him in a long time. I don't know.
He probably didn't even know.
So,
but yeah, I think that wraps it up. Hopefully you understand kind of that pathophysiology and therefore symptomatology and therefore why we treat and watch out for rhabdomyolysis.
And again, you can see how, like, we hope you take away from these podcasts is not like, oh, rhabdomyolysis, I'm going to give fluids, I'm done. We want you to understand why. We want you to think about, I need to be looking out for arrhythmias. I need to be, like, you know, getting an EKG on a patient who's got rhabdomyolysis is a really good idea.
Smart, yeah.
But you can see how if you don't understand this background stuff, you wouldn't even think about it.
It's a
right?
trauma. It's a trauma to the muscle. Why would I care?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, exactly. Why am I giving fluid for a trauma to the muscle? Like, that's what...
Right.
You know, that's what happens if we're just cookbook medics.
Exactly, right. And we want you guys to be more than that. So, again, if you guys have questions, comments, concerns, shoot us an email, podcast@guardiantestprep.com. If you have topics you want us to cover, we'd love to do that as well.
It only usually takes us 4 takes now.
Yeah. It was only 3. I think we didn't
get
to 4.
Yeah, we did get another 3.
We got in 3. So, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will see you next week. And, again, we appreciate you listening.
Stay sweet.
Hey guys, we hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, we'd love for you to check out the rest of our content at guardiantestprep.com. We specialize in preparing EMT, AEMT, and paramedic students for not only their school, but also the National Registry exam at the end. Enter EMT test prep with over 15 hours of videos, workbooks, question banks, and everything you need to pass. We'd love to have you get involved. Again, guardiantestprep.com. Check us out.